And as such, we will not be able to adhere to a five-day turnaround, as has been guided by the ministry's document, and as well in our follow-up conversations, they emphasize that boards should select key points throughout the school year where families who have chosen remote learning may choose, if space is available, to return to in-person learning. And what you will find in this section of the report is how we will be implementing those transition points. So the first transition points, other than the start of the school year, will be after Thanksgiving, which would coincide with our typical reorganization of classrooms in a regular school year. The second transition point will be after the December break, so the first day back in January. And then the third transition point will be after the March break, and the first day returning from that. So that is a significant change from our previous planning, and this comes from, again, the specifics and the guidelines, as well as our follow-up with the ministry representatives. I will just also highlight at the I'll highlight two other things in this section under elementary schools. Similar to any process that we have in schools, where there are extraordinary circumstances, then we would make a provision for a family to discuss that with the superintendent responsible for the school, and proceed that way to see whether or not there is an opportunity outside of these three key points in time to make a shift.
Have you had dinner?
The
oh, somebody is not on mute. I can hear somebody asking if someone's had dinner. Thank you, folks. Continue, Peter.
Thank you. So in order to facilitate a remote learning opportunity with a separate class and a separate teacher, and based on the parent, guardian, caregiver survey that we had conducted at the end of the school year, we are approximating 10 to 15% of students may be choosing remote learning only. We will verify this through the information we collect from families directly between the 17th and the 21st of August. And then we will establish what we are right now calling our remote learning school, where we will staff that school according to our collective agreements, requirements, as well as requirements based on class cap sizes and average class sizes. And the students and staff who will be part of that school will not be part of the in-person school for the time that they are part of the remote learning school. And that, again, is a significant shift. I'm going to now go to Section 6 on secondary schools, where much of what we had described previously remains. There's the confirmation now from the ministry that our secondary schools will begin in the adaptive delivery mode, or Scenario B. We have provided the model that our board will be utilizing to achieve that adaptive delivery mode, and extensive examples of that also provided in an appendix to this report. It's worth noting that the adaptive delivery mode will begin with 15 students, approximately 15 students per class, and that through our conversations with the Ministry of Education representative, they did indicate that the next step from the while still in the adaptive delivery mode, the next step may be to just simply increase the number of students within the adaptive delivery mode without moving directly to a conventional mode. The reason why that's important is that, again, adhering to our guiding principles, the model that we are proposing for our secondary schools, again, has been done in collaboration with our principals, vice principals, and our employee group representing our secondary school teachers. And it also adheres very, very strictly to the guidance and advice provided by Hamilton Public Health, as well as the guidance provided in the most recent ministry guidelines. And that is restricting students to only one cohort at a time. And when cohorts do need to change, so when a student were to move from one subject class to another subject class, that there be time and space provided in between that. And so the model that we are putting forward for our secondary schools allows students to continue with their choice of subjects, which they selected earlier on this year, giving them the variety and the breadth that we're very proud to be able to offer, that they will continue with their four courses during each of the semesters. However, in order to accomplish that, we will have them come in person on a rotational basis, so that the in-person components will be for a period of a number of days, whether they're in a four-period school or a five-period school, that will vary. That will be followed by a small period of time where all students will continue to learn remotely, and then they will shift to their next subject area where they will be able to attend and receive instruction and interact with their cohort peers in person. The advantage, again, is that it keeps our students in one cohort in the beginning of the year, approximately 15. That may expand to the average class size later on, but that would still be those students only being directly or indirectly part of or have contact with a limited number of students. And in our conversation with the Ministry of Education representatives and Public Health, they highlighted the criticalness of the indirect, what they call the indirect number of contacts a student might have. So, for instance, if we had moved to a model where students were attending in person for two subjects per day, so a quadmaster type of model. Given the size of schools that we have, given the variety of course selection that we provide our students, the indirect number of contacts that they would have would well exceed the 100 that is provided in the guidelines by the ministry and recommended by Public Health. And so for that reason, we were very pleased that the ministry was very supportive of this model, and that we feel that it meets a very stringent adherence to that first guiding principle, of providing a safe environment through limiting the cohorting to one. But it also allows for maximum flexibility if we needed to move to either one of the other scenarios. And just as importantly, it continues to provide our students with their choice, their pathways of all of the different courses that they have available to them. The afternoon portion of the day for our secondary students will involve the three remaining courses they have in a shorter time frame, done remotely, with the understanding that that will be remote learning, engaging with their classmates and their teacher through the standard platforms that we're providing. The last piece for both, for secondary schools is that in order to enable transportation, our bell times will remain the same, both the beginning of the day and the end of the day, so that we've structured the model to fit that, and those students requiring transportation will be permitted to stay at the school while being supervised, and then completing their remote learning from the school site and still be able to take the school bus at the end of the day. I will highlight on page 4-9 that through our 21st century learning strategy, through the provisioning of one-to-one devices for all of our secondary students, the significant professional learning that has occurred and it continues to occur, as well as the standardization of our digital platforms, the Hub and MS Teams, has really allowed us to have a model that provides this level of safety and of choice to continue with their course selections, and enables both students and staff to continue the work both in person and remotely. Section 7, students requiring special education supports and services. Just to highlight again here, there's a lot of information that, again, emphasizes the fact that the work has already begun because the work involves the transition work. Highlighted here is also the fact that towards the end of the summer and before the beginning of school, there are a number of programs where students will be invited in and walked through the new routines that they can expect as they re-enter school, whether it's elementary or secondary. In the section on our summer learning programs and supports, you will find a very extensive list of offerings that have either already occurred or will occur in the coming weeks. Again, all in support of our students requiring special education supports or services. As has been mentioned previously, a select number of students requiring significant support and or services will have the opportunity to attend daily in our secondary schools. And that was something that we had highlighted before, of course, in our elementary schools, because we are in a conventional mode. All students are welcomed each day. Section 8 under transportation, what I will highlight here that is different than our previous report is that through the work of the Governance Committee of the Hamilton-Wentworth Student Transportation Services, It has been decided that at this time, courtesy transportation will be suspended until further notice, whereas previously we had indicated that we would continue to look at providing courtesy transportation. As well, similar to the voluntary remote learning timelines of after Thanksgiving, after the December break, and after March break, those will be the time frames by which if a family elects not to have transportation services for their child or for their youth, that they will be able to reestablish the transportation service again, provided that they are eligible, only at those points in time. The reason being is the planning that is the extensive planning that is involved in terms of the cohorts and routes, as well as, of course, to continue to mitigate many of the potential shortages that we may have with drivers. Highlighted in this section and discussed earlier under the section on masks is that students in grades 4 to 12 will be expected to wear masks on a school bus, knowing that the first day where they have not come to school and been distributed masks will be available to students on their first day, but of course prior to getting onto the bus, but they will be invited to have their own masks. You'll also note there that as secondary schools are starting in an adaptive mode, the school bus runs will also be using an adaptive approach, and there'll be one student, and if they have a sibling or someone else that lives in the same household, with them per seat, as well as extra cleaning will be taking place on buses in between runs, and that's something that we hadn't highlighted previously. The next section around technology is, again, an update from previous reports where we still had not received the direction on whether we were in adaptive mode or conventional mode or fully remote. But just to highlight again, all secondary students, we will ensure they have access to a device, whether they're in the adaptive mode or if they do choose fully remote learning. Elementary students that do select in-person learning and who have been provided a device during the school closure will be expected to return that board device to their school so that we can ensure that we have an adequate supply of our board provision devices in our schools as well. Those choosing remote learning will be able to continue with their device as well. So that brings me to the end of the 9 sections. The 10th section on financial implications, I'm going to turn over to Associate Director Zucker to walk us through, and then I will come back and just wrap up with the next steps under Section 11. So, Stacey?
Thank you, Peter, and hello, everyone. So again, Kate, I'm going to look through or talk about the financial implications and mostly concentrate on the B memo that was issued. I know there have been a lot of questions with regards to funding and what's available, and so this should help trustees have that understanding of what we've been provided by the ministry. So the first comment that I'll make is that we, through the last report, provided an estimate of about $2.1 million that we would be required for PPE and additional cleaning. We still think that's a reasonable amount based on the information that we have. As we receive further information from the ministry with regards to costs, and also once we get through the first month and make sure that the supplies that we've ordered are appropriate and whether we have to start increasing our orders or decreasing depending on the usage, we'll have a better indication and we'll keep trustees up to date as we move along. So as I indicated last week, the ministry released the B memos, and that's how they release a lot of the financial information. They released B11, and it is available online. Investment to support school reopenings in response to the COVID outbreak. And there was confirmed funding. Some of it was reannouncement of funding, but some of it was new funding. And the funding is subject to regulation approval. They do state that, so the regulation still has to be approved for this funding to be 100%, but our assumption is that we will receive it. I'll just go through them quickly. The first one was for additional staffing. There is funding to hire additional teachers where needed on an application basis. The funding, again, there are many reasons why we would want to apply for it. And as trustees know, some boards are looking at class size. And I just wanted to reiterate that the funding won't allow HWDFB to reduce their class sizes significantly. If we were to adjust all elementary classes to a class size of 15 per class, we would require approximately 900 additional classroom teachers, and that would cost about $76 million. Now, that's assuming that everybody's in person, so obviously that would decrease from there. But you can imagine when the total funding for the entire province is $30 million, the funding isn't going to go particularly far. Not that, of course, we won't apply for it when necessary. In addition, we received about $1.2 million for additional caretakers, and we will be using those caretakers along with a reallocation of some of our the timing of some of our current caretakers to ensure that we have appropriate FTE in place for the additional cleaning that we will be doing during the day. There's health and safety training funding for occasional teachers and casual workers. The masks and PPE, they did make an announcement that the funding will be finalized once they figure out the recovery model, so meaning how much are they paying versus how much we're paying, and that hasn't been determined yet. So we are doing all of our ordering, as we indicated earlier, through the ministry. The ministry will be charging us back. At this point, we don't know what that chargeback will be, so we are ordering. We don't know the cost, but we do know that they are the costs that we've been seeing are better than the costs that we were to be able to get on our own. So that's good news. And then if the ministry covers a portion of it, that will also assist us. As previously announced, the ministry is providing us with $96,000 to support the purchase of enhanced cleaning supplies for transportation. There's funding to be determined, but $40 million in total. And again, we're usually about 2.5% of that amount. So just over $1 million usually. And that will help us with supporting our providers with PPE and cleaning for transportation or for buses in between runs, and enhanced cleaning throughout the day and the evenings as well. And for special education, we're receiving about $200,000 to support special education local needs. So that would be determined by the board as to how that $200,000 would be spent. And then in mental health, the ministry previously announced $167,000, so we received another $167,000 for a total of about $340,000 or $334,000 that we can use to support additional mental health. So that's the funding that has been announced entirely for COVID-19 from the ministry. Again, there are still amounts that we are to be determined. But again, based on this funding, aside from A and the teaching staff in A, but based on the funding and the $2.1 million that we provided as an estimate of cost last week, we will make up any shortfall with our contingency throughout the 2020-21 budget year. So I will turn it back to Associate Director Sylvan to go through the next steps.
Great. Thank you, Stacey. And so I'm on page 4-12, section 11, other next steps. And so just to highlight, there are 4 weeks prior to the first day of class for our students. There are many, many things that will need to be done over the course of those next 4 weeks. The following are just a set of some of the urgent actions that will need to be taken. But I'll begin with an enhanced communication. I've highlighted this earlier that we are very cognizant of communicating as much as possible with the information that we have as clearly as we can. And that's with our system leaders, our staff, our families, all of our students. And so starting this week, the communication will be weekly, and we will be using a structure that we've used in the past, so that our school leaders will receive bulletins. The director's message will go to all staff, and we'll have a chair and director's message to families and the broader community. Later on, under critical actions, you will see that individual schools will then also be reaching out to families and students directly, because while we've been talking about plans situated at our board level, then each one of the schools will need to communicate the very specific routines at their individual schools also. Under Section B, the voluntary remote learning pre-registration, again, utilizing the parent portal, vital that between the 17th and the 21st, we collect this information from families electing to have remote learning as opposed to in-person learning. Just as a side note, many school boards have started this process at some point during this week. We've talked about the timelines quite extensively. Feel that this week in particular, following this report, it would be really important to have a strong communication strategy campaign to reach as many families as possible, given the fact that it is still summertime, and to inform them of these critical dates and how to go about pre-registering for the remote learning. Again, that is for elementary schools. Section C, I didn't touch on this earlier for secondary schools, but secondary school students may also elect to do their learning fully remotely. In the report in that section, trustees will be able to read the two different options that secondary school students have. We won't be setting up an entirely remote learning school for secondary school students because of the model that we have. Secondary school students will be able to either continue their learning in the adaptive model through the rotations and on the days that their cohort would be attending in person, they would continue doing remote learning independently. Or the option that has always existed for our students in terms of a full remote learning is to make a timetable change into courses that are full e-learning courses. And we have many, many offerings in HWDSB for our students and have for a significant period of time. In order to do that, we're just directing students back to their school the week prior to school starting, when we do have some guidance staff back, and we have staff back in the school that will be able to look at making some of those timetable changes. D, student screening attestation, critical that this be completed. Again, it will be available as of August the 17th. We will be utilizing this week again to provide a lot of communication to families around what this is, how important it is, and the fact that no student will be permitted to attend school in person until the screening and attestation is completed. Transportation services also requires information from families through to not want to use the service. And so as they do regularly throughout school years, they will be contacting those families whose children and youth are eligible for transportation directly, and asking them whether or not they will be selecting the service or not. Under Section F, on the same page, cohorts for secondary school students. So again, as I indicated earlier, this process is continuing, and as soon as it is ready, it will be made available through schools to students, and whether they are in a cohort A or cohort B. And so that'll be prior to school beginning, the week prior, and if at all possible, sooner. School routines, as I mentioned earlier, under Section G, all of our schools, both elementary and secondary, once they have finalized their routines, now that we have our board set plans and processes, they will be communicating directly their school-specific routines prior to the start of school, again, in an effort so that families can continue to prepare their children for at return. Elementary school reorganization, so this will be different than in previous years. There will be a reorganization at prior to the start of the school year, approximately the 31st of August or during that week, and that will incorporate those students who will be going to the remote learning school. And then there will be the regular reorganization process that takes place each year towards the end of September into just prior to Thanksgiving. And again, making the adjustments at that time for our class sizes and our average class sizes and those students who are electing remote learning or in-person learning. And then finally, in 2 weeks' time, we will present, in 3 weeks' time, we will present again to trustees update number 4 on August the 31st. And at that time, again, we will have a similar format, either any changes and as well any data that we have available for trustees. So with that, those are the highlights of the reports, and I'll turn it back to the chair.
Thank you, Peter. So just before I go into questions, just a little bit of I'll just outline how this discussion will go. So I will first go through the roster to or roll call just to find out if folks have questions about the report and any sections of it. To our student trustees, normally you would have a trustee mentor on either side of you at the trustee table. That's not possible, so I will just give you the same encouragement. You are welcome to ask any questions that you may choose. You can ask questions around items that you see here in the plan. You can also ask questions that around what items you can frame it as, have certain items been considered for school reopening? It may be specific to your peers at the secondary schools or elementary schools or all students. That is just some advice around how you may want to frame your questions. And then at the end of the discussion with regard to the report, I was made aware of two motions that will be coming forward. The first one from Trustee Bingham, the second from Trustee Pagan-Miller. And so we will move to those at the end of questions, more general questions towards the report. So with that, I am going to start with questions towards the general report. Trustee Archer, do you have any questions?
Yes, I do. I have a couple, actually.
Please continue.
Is staff. What date will staff be in the school to answer the phones for parents that have questions? I've had many calls over the summer, especially the end of June, beginning of July, parents not being able to have a phone or just voicemail and no answer or return calls. So I'm just wondering what date, if parents are needing questions and have concerns, what date will they expect someone to be answering phones?
Executive Director Sovereign.
Thank you, and through the chair. So our secondary schools remain open throughout the summer, and we do have staff there working, and our elementary schools, our office assistants do begin their 10-month employments on August the 31st. So the expectation will be that they will be answering phone calls and be working at that time. However, we do have a provision during the summer if there are questions where they do come through the Ed Center, not physically these days, but virtually through the Ed Center, and they are redirected to the appropriate staff. So that's how we've been facilitating communication throughout this summer, as we have in the past.
Thank you.
Maybe we need to make that more aware, available for parents, especially if they're going. A lot of parents aren't able to maneuver the computer to answer questions or report for back to school. So that's my concern. My other concern is this report, a lot of attention detail with this report, back to school safety, cleanliness, etc. My concern is the schools that we've opened for a summer program, whether it's a daycare or a camp program, when do those programs close for the schools to have time to clean and for teachers to even go into their own classrooms? And how safe is that?
Associate Director Sovereign.
Yeah, thank you, and through the chair. So each one of the programs that we've made available through the summer, we have done through the advice of public health, which includes the steps that would be required in terms of any time that's needed for cleaning, any time that would be required in terms of, transitioning and having different individuals in there. So while each one of them varies a little bit, all of the scheduled programs in the summer have been done together in consultation and the advice of public health, and our facility services are aware of the timelines they have in terms of cleaning.
Trustee Archer?
No further comments or questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Bingham.
Hi. I do have a few questions, and first I'd like to welcome our new student trustees to their very first meeting. After a few of these, you'd be much more comfortable with how we have to do things at the moment. I do want to thank staff for everything that they have done up to this point, and to think that we're not done by any means. So thank you for all your extreme work to bring this report even. It's just been amazing. I do want to say to the EK community, thank you for your delegation tonight. because the motion that it will be putting on the floor at the appropriate time pretty much parallels a lot of things that are that were in the letters that are of concern tonight from them as well. Going back to a couple of things, one of them would be busing. When it comes to the supervision of the students wearing the masks on the bus and the extra cleaning, is that going to be done by the bus drivers, or is that a whole different protocol that's going on? Do we have extra supervision on those buses? Do we have other people who are going to be cleaning, doing more cleaning on the bus and things? That's my first question.
Mm-hmm. Associate Director Sovereign.
Thank you. And through the chair, I'm actually going to ask Stacey to take this question.
Thank you. And through the chair, we're still working with our providers to determine what we're going to figure out what the funding is that becomes available to boards to be able to determine how this would work. But it is possible that, yes, this will, you know, sometimes in between runs there are only 10 or 15 minutes. So it would be likely the expectation that the bus driver will be wiping down the high-touch surfaces. But we are still working with the providers and waiting for the funding announcement to determine 100% that's how it's going to work.
Okay. Everything is going to take a lot of time to get everything going. On the parent portal, is there a place for parents to, or family members to ask questions of staff if they may not be what they want, what they're looking for in the portal itself? There might be something completely obscured that they would like to ask. Is there a space there, or is it just that they would contact the school for any kind of questions that you're just not finding on the portal? Like when you look at the website, you're not quite sure where anything is. Is there a space that is there that would be connected to another staff member to be able to help them get through things?
Associate Director Severin.
Thank you. And through the chair, I'm going to ask Sean McKillop if he can answer this, as he's been leading a lot of our work around the portal.
Thank you, and through the chair, I'm happy to answer questions on the parent portal. There will be a designated section on the homepage and school pages that will be assigned to the parent portal, and parents will be able to access that when starting Monday, August 17th.
Perfect, thank you. With all the changes that we have had, the ministry stepping up and announcing things the way they have. Minister Lecce has also called this a living document that we're working with as well. If by chance they end up having huge changes come again before September, will we be able to be ready to make those changes to the best of our abilities, or would we be, depending, I guess, how big the change might be, would we be able to put school off for a week or two or three in order to put everything in place? I mean, I know that staff is extreme at this point with a lot of things, but would we be ready if we were blindsided by something?
Associate Director?
Thank you, and through the chair, this certainly has been like putting the most complex puzzle one has ever seen together, and sometimes you realize you don't even have all the pieces, or the pieces change. But I will say that we're certainly preparing, and we will be ready for the first day of school. Being guided by those five principles, I think, has really helped in terms of any adjustments that we need to make. Whenever we, put safety first for students and staff, all of our decisions guided through that piece. but also that ease of transitioning between the scenarios, which we've already done, and we've put most of our models and procedures through that lens of shifting and making sure that it can work through the different scenarios. Again, has been extraordinarily helpful. Trying not to disrupt school routines has also forced us to really think of a number of contingencies of what if. And of course, working within our collective agreements, terms and conditions, and within our financial means, we're ready for the first day. So to answer your question, Trustee Bingham, we certainly hope there aren't any changes, but we certainly understand if there needs to be because of a changing circumstance. And as we've been doing, we'll be ready to make any necessary adjustments.
Great, thank you. I'll save my last one for when I do put my motion on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have Trustee Buck back on the line yet? Hearing not, I'll come back. Trustee Danko.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought I had a moment before I started my questions. I have a significant number of questions, and I'm not going to ask them all just to respect everyone's time, but I do wonder about the possibility of having a follow-up special board to go through different scenarios. And I think that's what's missing for me right now is that big picture is been presented. You can imagine the school, you can imagine lines, you can imagine desks in place and staff in place, but understanding what the day-to-day experience might be like, what happens if someone comes down with a cold, what happens if someone does have to make that change in choice and they want to shift from in-person learning to remote learning, those types of things, it would be really helpful, I think, for our community, for our families, and for trustees to have an opportunity to do that before August 31st. So I'll throw that out there as an idea, and we can take that offline. I want to echo...
Noted.
I just want to echo Trustee Bingham's comments to staff. So I recognize that staff has been engaged in such significant work with changing rules that keep changing. I was reading through the ministry report today, and you pointed out I was in an old version, and it had just been updated, and the mask requirements for staff had changed just in the last few days. So I know this is extremely challenging, and my questions are not intended to reflect on staff, but to reflect on the fact that we haven't had the leadership we needed in the time that we've had to say, here's what fall is going to look like. Let's commit funding. Let's just make this safe for students. Unfortunately, the ministry has sat on this for far too long and is making – I understand things are changing. I understand new information is coming out. But we need strong leaders right now, and this has been very difficult. I'll just start with a couple of questions, and maybe I'll leave some for my colleagues to ask. And I'll try to stay focused. I'll start with physical adaptations that were mentioned under enhanced public health measures. I'm wondering if we know for our average classroom what the maximum number of students that we can physically distance at 1 meter and at 2 meters, what would that number be in our buildings?
Associate Director?
Thank you, through the chair, and I'll begin, and then I will ask Associate Director Zucker if she has anything to add. Appreciating the question and appreciating the thousands and thousands of classrooms that we have across our district, I want to first of all just commend the staff, particularly in facilities, services under Dave Anderson's leadership for taking not only an approximation, but sort of a worst case scenario, if you will, with a really small sized elementary classroom, kindergarten space, similar in secondary and also a variety of different types of secondary classrooms, and mocked up what it would look like to be 2 meters apart, desks 2 meters apart, having the teacher remain 2 meters apart, and right down to considerations of placements of those desks, you know, to avoid any unnecessary additional traffic. And the reason I couch it this way is that when I was part of a meeting with public health where some of this was presented, and they did comment that you know, staff had gone really over and above in terms of placement of and thoughtfulness in terms of the distancing. So in terms of some of the smallest spaces we have, we've certainly been able to have 15 students at 2 meters apart. And then there are classrooms that are slightly larger that would be able to accommodate more. And as we've indicated in the report, there may be some classrooms where it may be a little bit more challenging to fit students, furniture, teacher, and have any type of additional distancing provided. And in those cases, we're already and have been exploring alternatives such as the use of learning commons and gyms. But each one of those has a trade-off. If you make the gym a classroom or a set of classrooms, it's offline then as a gym. But all of those are being taken into consideration. So I'll turn it over to Associate Director Zuko if she has anything to add.
Thank you, Peter. And I would just echo Peter's comments that we have gone into our smallest classrooms, set the desks up, and I was just scrambling to try to find it because we did it back in, I don't think it's May or June that we had set those desks up. And I think maybe in our smallest classroom, we were looking at possibly 11 students with 2 meters distancing. That seems to be what's sticking in my head, but I can't find it off the top of my head. But I know that we've looked at what can we accommodate in our smallest classrooms, and if we were truly held to that 15 number, then we were determining how many classrooms we'd actually have to make some adjustments for. So we do have all of that data. I just don't have it at the tip of my fingers. I apologize, but it's definitely something that we've done. But for the most part, our classrooms will accommodate 15 students.
Thank you, and thank you for the work that's been already done. I know that you've also been looking at an inventory of our spaces, and that's part of that work. I appreciate that you looked at it from a perspective of 15 students, but were we able to look at were there spaces where 20 students would be able to fit with the 2 meter distancing and space to spare?
So perhaps I can answer that through the chair. The guidelines provided by the ministry is really what we've been utilizing. And so the guidelines in conventional mode was that there was not a requirement for a 2 meter physical distancing. And if we were in adaptive mode, then there would be a 2 meter physical distancing requirement and the number would be in and around 15. So those are the parameters that we were using. So we haven't explored what the distance would be between desks if, let's say, the number of students were to be 20, and that would also be dependent on whether it was a primary classroom, a junior classroom, and so on. But JC, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
No, I think you got it. Thanks.
Thank you. So I guess I'll just shift from that question. It segues into one of the questions I had. Why do we, and maybe you can't answer this, but in the discussions with the ministry and with public health, why do we have a different scenario for secondary students versus elementary students in Hamilton when it's the same community context, it's the same number of cases in the community? Why is it we're in the adaptive mode for secondary with physical distancing, 15 students, et cetera, for students that can mask and maintain masks quite easily and understand the rules, but we're not doing that for elementary? Do you have any idea about that?
Associate Director, Sovereign.
Thank you. And through the chair, I will ask Superintendent Sharon Stepanian. She has been tirelessly working with Hamilton Public Health, amongst many other hats that she wears these days. So I'll ask her if any of this has come up in their discussions.
Thank you, and through the chair, can I just check that you can hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Oh, okay, perfect. So thank you to the trustee for the question. I think that there are a number of elements that we need to consider. As Associate Director Silverin spoke about a little bit earlier, the layering of strategies is one of the most important pieces with respect to when we are looking at the ways in which we can support keeping our students and our staff safe. And so certainly we have the layering happening both in elementary and in secondary. The other piece when we're looking at differing approaches within elementary and secondary, I think somewhat speaks to the epidemiology with respect to COVID-19. So we know that some of the research that we're seeing right now speaks to the fact that while anyone of any age can contact COVID-19. We certainly see it as a community and also as a broader community with Ontario and Canada with far less frequency with younger children than we do with adolescents. So certainly the ministry's recommendation around the approach that we're seeing would certainly align with that information. I think the other piece, when you look at the report that came forward from SickKids, and again, recognizing that the ministry's guidance document was informed by that document, is the thinking around the impact on young children and their mental health and well-being when they are not in a place and space where they are having contact with other children of their own age, and they're not in that regular school environment and that school structure. And so I would say that, you know, really ensuring that we have that layering approach in place in both elementary and secondary is critical, recognizing that certainly from an epidemiology approach, at least where we are today appears different as between children who are younger and older. And the other piece around really the longer term impact of our youngest learners not being in an environment with their peers. And again, that guidance recommendation that came forward in terms of the models of approaching being informed through the ministry's conversation provincially with Ontario Public Health and informed through the work that was done through the SickKids report.
Thank you for that. I have to highlight that when we look at the studies that are out there, and this isn't to argue a point, but I have to highlight that a lot of the research divides children into 0 to 10 and 10 to 20, and it looks at teens and middle school age children in the same group, and their behaviors and ability to contract COVID is very similar. And I know there's new evidence coming out about whether or not kids can spread COVID easily despite not having symptoms. So appreciate that we're working with emerging evidence, but I think it's important for the public to be aware of those things as well. My next question was about public health itself. Can staff just clarify for the public the role of public health in our procedures? You've highlighted it a number of times that you've consulted with public health, that I've heard that they've had to approve certain plans. Can you let us know what their role is as we are doing our planning? Because in the absence of a public statement, like we've heard from Toronto Public Health, a lot of families are thinking that public health hasn't been part of the work here. And I just want to make sure that's very clear.
So I'll go to associate, actually, I'll go right to the director, Director Figueredo.
Yes, thank you, through the chair. So I think it's important to note, even prior to school closure, that we were in contact with public health around a COVID-19 table as early as January. And in conversations with the ministry has been clear that that the command table at the provincial level also includes Ontario Public Health and the Chief Medical Officer, and the local level has been meeting with the committee that Superintendent Stefanian has been engaged with. Even during our school closure time, we had to develop protocols for access to buildings. So such as when we had staff had to come in to get resources, we had a global protocol, but every time we had to access, we needed a specific procedure for that access. Another example is when parents and students had to come in to retrieve their belongings. We had to develop that procedure. So the local public health units, and I've spoken to Dr. Elizabeth Richardson, our local chief medical officer, she's been operating with and her team with both boards and have been giving us advice and has been consulting around our protocol, but they've also been reminding us that we have to, you know, the Ministry of Education is the one that directs sort of our work in our sector, so they're going to give us the best public health advice. They also know there's child development that we have to be concerned about as well. And as well as how we operationalize these items. So they've been involved, and I'll ask if Superintendent Stefanian could provide further examples of recent examples that we're involved in for September startup, just like breakout management. If there is a case, how we manage that and other protocols that they're involved in for September startup. So to Sharon?
Sorry.
Is the chair okay if I go ahead?
Yeah, please do. Okay. If the director directs an item to you, you're welcome to begin speaking. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. I want to echo our director's comments. The support that we have received from our local Hamilton Public Health Services during this time has been absolutely fantastic, and I believe our associate director had commented that local public health has been incredibly responsive and gets back to us in very, very short time frames so that we can move our work forward. That includes the procedures that we developed during closure, as the director referred to, but also to procedures and work that we're engaged in right now. So to give trustees a bit of a sense of what that work has looked like, we have had meetings with public health where we globally spoke about the return to school in September. This was a number of months ago. We talked about some of the guiding principles from a public health lens that we needed to keep in mind as a school board in terms of our initial planning, and then that allowed us to begin to do some of the early work. As we developed procedures and protocols, they are all reviewed by Hamilton Public Health. So we have in front of them global procedures that have been informed by them, things such as contact tracing, exclusion, screening that we spoke about, screening for students, screening for staff, screening for visitors that come into the building. When we develop our signage, all of those are reviewed by Hamilton Public Health. Then we have specific procedures for elementary and for secondary that are specific to the operations and to the program within both elementary and secondary that public health is reviewing. So, for example, how do we approach disinfecting of shared materials, as an example, in a health and physical education class, if we're going to be using balls, what is the approach to disinfecting those between the youth by various cohorts? How do we approach the cleaning and disinfecting of playground equipment? Again, all of those informed by public health and them sharing their expertise. Then we also have protocols and procedures that we've developed with respect to our operations within the school office and general school operations, things such as what type of information are we gathering from visitors when they come into the school, if there is a need for contact tracing. Again, all of that being informed through Hamilton Public Health Services. And so we have been very cognizant every step of the way in terms of connecting in with them and meeting with them to ensure that we have their best thinking to inform how we can, again, support that multifaceted, layered approach to mitigating risk for students and staff.